It's an everyday occurrence that happens whenever I leave the house with my daughter. Just getting up in the morning and trying to go to school is hard for us. She doesn't want to go to school. Some kids don't. My daughter every day rejects going to school. Why? Because she knows that the men, that she now calls them, are waiting for her at her schoolyard. They jump out of bushes. They jump out of cars. They come from behind buildings. Who knows where they come from? But all of a sudden, a seemingly normal schoolyard with children running to and fro turns into what feels like a battleground. Here come these men with their cameras besieging the school and these little children, all to get a photograph.
Actress Halle Berry testifying last summer in support of a state bill to protect kids from paparazzi. Governor Brown signed the bill and it went into effect January 1st. But some celebrities do not think the new law has gone far enough. Actress Kristen Bell and her husband, actor Dax Shepard, have been leading a boycott of magazines that still publish unauthorized photos of children. And they seem to have made some progress. This week, People Magazine and the celebrity gossip site Just Jared have agreed to stop running any photos of kids without the permission of their parents. And Kristen Bell joins me now. Hi.
Hi.
Well, so what happened? How did you end up leading this boycott? Was there something that pushed you over the edge?
No, I think I'm just the loudest of the bunch. I have quite a feeling of intolerance for people who don't care about the welfare of children. And I guess I somehow just, with the help of my husband, came up with this sort of coordinated effort. And I thought there's no better way to do this than to sort of bring it to the court of public opinion. I thought the healthiest way to solve an issue is to start a conversation with people. I believe in the informed consumer. I think people want to be educated about what goes into procuring their food, their news, anything they consume. And so I just wanted to let people know what actually went into all these sweet little pictures they see in magazines and on TV.
Right. And so you were targeting People Magazine specifically. How come?
Because I think that they're the best at what they do. I think that this cause was in line with their brand. I targeted them because I like them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have long had a standing of being a classy human interest magazine. They're not like other trashy tabloids. And somehow, in my opinion, they got sucked into doing what the other trashy rag mags do, which is commodifying children, essentially. And I just did not believe that that was in line with their brand. And I called them out because I knew that they would change. And I wasn't wrong. I think I was so proud that, I mean, it was within days of them having an internal discussion about it that they said, you're absolutely right. And I will happily favor their publication in the future because of it.
So you'll give interviews to people over other magazines?
Oh, absolutely. And I knew they would turn, and that's why I targeted them. It was very, very specific. You know, magazines like Star and In Touch and Life and Style that are very flashy and that have pictures of a six-year-old on the cover and print something catty like Surrey's Hidden Drama, we've all lost sight of the fact that that's a child.
Surrey Cruz, you're talking about.
Surrey Cruz is not fictional. Surrey Cruz is not a fictional being. She's a child with feelings and probably a whole hell of a lot of insecurities.
So why isn't the new California law enough for you? Why the boycott?
Because I personally believe that the consumer has a lot more power than the government. I think that's always been the case. The law, Senate Bill 606, definitely protects the kids from being, I think it says, substantially emotionally damaged, which means that photographers can't get as close as they did. They can't push and shove. They can't scream. They can't make the child cry. To me, this is a twofold issue. A, you can't go around and upset children for a living. You just can't. And B, somewhere along the lines, we've lost respect for the anonymity of minors. Realistic news sources don't use their names when they're involved in a crime or on the evening news. And that's for a reason, because we have respect for children in this country. And I believe wholeheartedly in the First Amendment. I think that its reach is massive and necessary. But I just don't think that should apply to celebrities' kids who didn't choose to be public figures. They're not for public consumption. We made these choices. They did not.
Right. And so some people might say, well, look, that's part of the deal, this sort of devil's bargain that you've made by choosing to become a Hollywood star, is that your entire life is open now, that you live by the paparazzi lens and you die by the paparazzi lens.
You know, I mean, yeah, I guess that's an argument. It doesn't seem like an argument to me, because my child is a private citizen. She should have rights. I don't think any child should be punished or brought to harm based on their parents' decision, the decisions, no matter what their parents do for a living. And whether your parent works a 9-to-5 or is unemployed or is a celebrity, the child should not suffer because of the parents' decisions.
So any other celebrities joining you in this and not going to be giving interviews to publications that publish photos of children?
Oh, yeah, there are tons. It's a very big group at this point. Amy Poehler, Channing Tatum and Jenna Dewan, Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Aniston, Ellen DeGeneres, and Portia. There's a very, very large list, and it's really only growing, of people who are no longer going to cooperate with outlets who they feel subject their children to harassment.
And have you heard from those outlets themselves?
Yeah, we've heard from quite a few, actually, and quite a few have already applied a no kids policy. The Today Show just did it this morning. As you know, People Mag did it. A few, like OMG Insider, had already had it in place. ET was the first to sort of lead the charge, and I have meetings set all around town to make this plea to other outlets and basically let them know that we're just not going to cooperate anymore because children have to stay sacred.
Well, Kristen Bell, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's actress Kristen Bell, who's been leading an effort to get the paparazzi to leave kids out of their celebrity photos. Joining us on the line now is someone who works on the other side of the lens. Frank Griffin runs the celebrity photography agency Bauer Griffin. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks. So what do you make of Kristen Bell's effort to get the paparazzi to avoid photographing celebrity kids?
I think she speaks very eloquently, and I find it hard to disagree with most of what she says. I'm a father myself, and obviously I consider my son's safety and his obviously the same. He's not faced with the same kind of issues that celebrity children are.
Yeah.
I can talk about. I don't even know quite how Bauer Griffin is going to react. We have a holding brief. We've always taken the higher ground. We've avoided, and it's been my specific instructions that where the photographer is part of the story, it's no longer a story. There's a lot of hypocrisy in the business, and I can talk about what I believe the future holds for people like Kirsten Dunst or other celebrities with children.
Kristen Bell. Well, what are your rules?
Kristen Bell, sorry.
Yeah, what are your rules for photographers, your photographers? Do you have rules? Do you say to them, you're not to photograph the children of celebrities?
No, that's the issue on the other side is the demand is voracious. I don't think most people...
The demand from the readers, you mean?
The demand from the readers, yeah. And what we're talking about now is what's not going to happen in the United States or California. The demand hasn't gone away in Greece or in Portugal or in Belgium or in Holland. So there will still be people out there who are prepared to take the risk, even of breaking the law, and taking pictures of those kids to sell in other markets.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's happened before, and I feel for what she says, and I can't disagree with most of what she says.
So would you not just tell your photographers that that's a bright line and that you're not allowed to take those photos?
If it's illegal, photographers should not be the ones to decide whether or not to take a picture. Traditionally, it's the editor who decides that's not suitable, this is suitable.
But your agency takes the photographs and then you sell them to magazines, right?
That's the simplest way of putting it, yeah.
Right. So you could say to your photographers,
no, I can't.
Take
I can't
those
tell.
Photos.
I can't tell my. Yes, I do say, don't upset children. Don't get in their way. Be polite. I have to say, Kirsten Bell that was talking.
Kirsten Bell. Mm-hmm.
Kirsten Bell. I think it's a little bit sad she didn't. She's gone to the outlets. She's kind of trying to shoot the messenger, not go to the root of the problem. And I find it a little bit sad that she doesn't talk to agencies like myself to come to a more satisfactory conclusion. I agree with what she says. Mm-hmm. I can't stop freelancers running red lights or doing things that aren't that are not legal or immoral. I can ask, I can ask my photographers not to go near Jennifer Garner, not to go near Halle Berry, not to do things that may upset or offend children. But then, by the same token, I see these kids brought to premieres or Instagrammed and posted and widely available. I see children that are sold to publications, set up pictures where the children are worth a lot of money. We call it sold, but where someone has a baby and they take a picture and give it to the magazine or sell it to the magazine for a lot of money. So there's a little bit of contradiction there. Mm. And that's one of the reasons why I think someone like Kirsten should perhaps talk to someone like us with a view to solving, getting to the root of the problem and solving the issue that way, rather than going back. It's a little bit like stopping people using drugs without going preventing the supply or arresting the supplier, but the drug use still carries on.
Right, but I think that is what she's trying to do in terms of getting people to boycott the magazines that publish these photos, so therefore stopping
it's
the demand.
It's one of the ways, yes. It's one of the options open to her, yes.
Right.
I accept that.
Yeah. So walk us through the financial aspects of this. Are photos of celebrities with their children worth a lot more than photos of them without?
It's not. It's the wrong question. Photos depends what they're doing. Just to have to say, the average photo, a picture of a photo is between $20 and $50, regardless of whether they're with children or without children.
$20 or $50, even if it's, let's say, Britney Spears with her kids or Angelina Jolie?
Well, Angelina Jolie, but there's usually 40 or 50 photographers, so maybe 30 of them will get $50 per publication.
So 40 to 50 photographers swarming around Angelina Jolie and her children.
It's a lot. It's a lot better than it was. I mean, there was one agency 5 years ago that had 170 photographers operating in LA. I don't agree with it. I don't think it's a pleasant situation. And I think that when I started working here, I did 2 decades almost as a music photographer, and then I worked, came here 24 years ago and did a lot of work on the ground, and there were 6 photographers in L.A.
So there's this new law in California that makes it a misdemeanor for photographers to, quote, pursue children in a, quote, harassing manner to get a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
What
yeah.
do you think of that new law?
I don't really have an opinion of those kinds of laws. They're kind of sexy. I think there are a lot more. I think there are a lot of other more important issues that should be addressed. I think the police have enough on their hands. A few years ago, I had a burglary at my house with a value of $37,000 missing. I couldn't get an officer to attend.
Oh,
he was far too busy. Even the fingerprint. Oh, we had a suspect as well. He said, "No, we can't. Unless you actually saw him, you're not even going
to
bother."
So you think it's unnecessary to have this lot of waste of police time?
I think there are enough laws in place. I remember even a decade and a half ago, 2 photographers who jostled Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was picking his kids up at the school in Santa Monica. They were sentenced to hard time. It's quite simple. They were restricting his passage on the sidewalk, and the judge found them guilty. And I think one of them got 6 months and one got 3 months.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, the pictures that Halle Berry presented and the picture that you just presented of Angelina Jolie and her children being swarmed by photographers, do the paparazzi and the photographers and photo agency owners such as yourself, do you ever pause to think, well, you know, let's protect these children, the anonymity of them and their rights and not upset them?
Yeah, absolutely, but not whole, not 100%. Because on the other hand, you'll see, I don't want to name any names, but you'll see a major celebrity with a movie coming out will take his kids to the Ivy and go shopping at Maxfield's because he'll have his picture taken and it'll help sell the movie.
With the child. The child will help
with
sell the
children,
movie.
With the children, yes. You'll see them arrive at premieres and hold the kids up. A lot of celebrities, for example, they have children's clothing designs or they're promoting products, and so they dress the kids up in their designs every day before they go up. So it's a little bit two-sided, and it's difficult. If someone makes a rule, if someone passes a law and says, this is not legal, then that's acceptable to me. I don't think necessarily the photographer should be well-behaved. I can't control these people. Most of them are freelance anyway. The days of their earning $10,000, $15,000 and salary and car are over. It doesn't happen anymore. It's like the Wild West out there.
All right. Frank Griffin runs the celebrity photography agency Bauer Griffin. Frank, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
Well, if you want to weigh in on this, we would love to hear your thoughts. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-844-PRESS-PLAY, 1-844-PRESS-PLAY, or you can weigh in on our Facebook, KCRW's Press Play, or our Twitter, at KCRW Press Play. Coming up, a new conspiracy theory about Pixar's Toy Story films is blowing up on the internet. And when we say new conspiracy theory, it's because it's not the only conspiracy theory related to the Toy Story movies. We'll find out what all the buzz is about coming up on Press Play.
Make a donation of just a dollar a day, and you can join one of our exciting and exclusive angel clubs. Choose from music, books, DVDs, or cookbooks delivered right to your front door. Learn more and join now at kcrw.com/join.
This is Press Play. I'm Madeline Brand. There are conspiracy theories for just about anything in the public eye, from the JFK assassination to 9/11 to the ingredients in Coca-Cola and to a certain group of beloved animated movies made by Pixar. There's a theory that all the Pixar movies are connected. Toy Story, Cars, WALL-E, Monsters, Inc., all part of one universe. John Negroni is a writer, and he's also known as the Pixar Detective. Welcome to Press Play, John.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. Tell us, what is your grand unified Pixar theory? And that's on all caps, right?
Okay, yeah. Well, the Pixar theory is basically a narrative that I put together uniting all the Pixar movies into one story. I wrote it in a singular blog post last summer, and since then it's kind of evolved into just this really long-form, complicated theory about how each movie exists in the same world, and they're all related and connected to each other, and they all exist in one singular timeline.
Even though they were made years apart.
That's right. There's even a lot of people who say that the Pixar executives, when they were first coming up with the ideas of several of the Pixar movies, they actually came up with it in one afternoon while they were having lunch. And that was actually one reason why so many people started to believe that the movies may exist in the same universe. People have been trying to prove it for the past couple of decades, and so I came along and just kind of threw it together.
Okay, so could you briefly give us a rundown of how they're all connected?
I'll try, and I don't want to get too detailed, obviously. It's a really long theory, and I include every single movie. So it's all of the Toy Story movies, Monsters, Inc., Incredibles, Up, Ratatouille, and Finding Nemo. It's all connected, but the brief rundown is basically that you know, there's a struggle between machines and humans. You know, machines like we see in The Incredibles, and machines like we see in how toys come alive when people aren't around to see them. And basically, humans pollute the Earth, something that we see in Up. And the machines basically have to send the humans away in order to rebuild the world and clean it up and everything. And so they send the humans away on Axiom, and the machines take over Earth, and in like we see the Cars movies, the machines are there instead of the humans, and they've taken over all of the human landmarks, and they dominate the world for hundreds of years. And like in WALL-E, we find out that humans were gone for centuries, but the cars eventually all die out because, as we know in the Toy Story movies, the machines are powered by humans. The imagination and the love of humans is something that they need. So eventually, they all die out except for one robot that manages to keep a connection to human things, and that's WALL-E. And he goes out, finds the humans, and brings them back. And then we see, you know, the world kind of resets. But instead of humans taking over, it's time for animals to take over now. We see it in A Bug's Life that, you know, animals are all that we really see anymore. And thousands of years pass, and all of the animals mutate into huge, ferocious monsters. And they're animals, but they're animals that have basically evolved. But the problem still remains. There's no humans anymore, and they need energy, you know, to power their machines and their civilization, because that hasn't changed. So they create doors that allow them to go back in time. And by doing that, they're able to harvest the energy of humans. And that's all I'm going to say for now. There's a twist ending.
Okay.
You know, I bring up time travel, but, you know, anybody who wants to find out what the twist ending is, they have to read it.
Yeah. Well, my mind is blown. I'm not quite sure what to make of it. Let me just add on to that you came out recently with a theory about the identity of Andy's mom in the Toy Story movies, and let's just take a listen to her.
What are you going to do with these toys? Should we donate them to Sunnyside?
Mom, no one's going to want those old toys.
Fine. You have till Friday. Anything that's not packed for college or in the attic is getting thrown out.
Whatever you say, Mom.
Okay, so that's Andy's mom. What is the conspiracy, or what is your theory around her?
Well, actually, a few months ago, someone came to me with a theory and the idea that Andy's mom is actually Emily, Jesse's owner. And they asked me to look into it. And
Jesse's another toy.
Yeah, that's right. Jesse is from Woody's Roundup, the same toy line as Woody. And so I looked into it, and I tried to figure out, okay, you know, is this really a thing? Like, is it possible that, you know, Jesse's owner that abandoned her would be the same person as Andy's mom, and it would be a full circle thing? And so I looked into it, and I put together this new theory that basically uses how, well, you know, when Andy is a kid in the first couple of Toy Story movies, mm-hmm. he has a hat that is red and has a white lace. And you're curious because, well, you know, why would he have a hat like that? And people have wondered that and have asked that. Like, his hat actually looks like Jesse's. Well, what I figured out is if you look in Toy Story 2 and you look at Andy, or you look at Emily's hat that she wears when she has Jesse, the first thing you notice is that the hats are identical, the hat that she wears, Emily, and the hat that Andy wears. And so the idea is that she passed it down. And also, we know that the ages match up because if you look at the kinds of things that Emily has, they're all, you know, reminiscent of the 60s and the 70s, and we do know that Jesse was in storage for a long time. And so there's a couple other clues I threw in there, kind of just kind of how the dates work out. But the idea is that, yeah, she eventually would let go of Emily, or Emily would let go of Jesse, and Jesse would eventually cut back into her life.
Okay. Okay. Mind is now blown again. All right. So have you ever floated your idea to the Pixar executives, the filmmakers themselves, and have they ever responded to your ideas?
You know, I've never actually reached out to them before. I know people have on my behalf and everything. I think part of it's a subconscious, you know, desire in me to not have the truth be spoiled for me. But I just rather...
Wait, the truth being your theory.
That it would be, yeah. That it wouldn't be true. Uh-huh. You know, either way, I kind of like the mystery that's assigned to it. But a couple of people have spoken about it. None of them have ever confirmed or denied it, of course.
You know, of course.
Kind of poke jokes at it, and it, you know, it's always funny, but... for this recent theory, Lee Ingridge actually tweeted that he was getting annoyed at how many people were asking him who Andy's mom was. And so I felt a little bad because I kind of, you know, soured his Monday a little bit. But
well, let's hope you never find out that this isn't true.
I hope not. Well, as the movies come out, I'm just going to come up with more reasons for why it has to be true.
Right. So you'll never have a movie that'll disprove your theory. You'll always figure out a way for it to be included.
Well, you know, I don't want to say that that's the reason, but, you know, I have time travel on my side, so
yeah,
I feel like I'm ready for anything.
All right. John Negroni, he's a writer. He's also known as the Pixar detective. John, thank you.
Thank you.
the road look rough ahead, and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed. You just remember what your old past said, boy, you got a friend in me.
All right, coming up on Press Play, we're going to switch gears and tell you the story of the downfall of the LA County Sheriff's Department. It really reads like a TV drama, including federal indictments and the resignation of Sheriff Lee Baca. We're going to get to the bottom of all that coming up on Press Play after a news update with Eric Roy.
Listen to KCRW's 24-hour all-news channel. Stream BBC World Service, NPR, and KCRW programs. Continuous coverage and accessible via our smartphone app or online at kcrw.com.
This is Press Play. I'm Madeline Brand. The story of the downfall of the LA County Sheriff's Department reads like a TV drama, something like The Shield sprinkled with some House of Cards political chicanery. We're now witnessing the last episodes of the current season. The federal indictments have come. The sheriff, Lee Baca, has been forced to resign. His deputy, Paul Tanaka, suspected of pushing the limits of the law, is now struggling to win the upcoming election. In the current issue of Los Angeles Magazine, Celeste Freeman examines just how the department fell apart. And she's here now. Hi.
Hi, Madeline. It's great to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you. Tell us about the Sheriff's Department. It is one of the largest police departments, law enforcement agencies, I should say, in the country. What does it encompass?
It is, and it's the largest sheriff's department in the world. And everybody seems to know a lot about the LAPD, but we all know very little about the Sheriff's Department. It patrols, it polices all of unincorporated LA County. But it also has 42 contract cities, which are within the county, but they're actually incorporated cities, but they don't want to provide their own police force, so they hire the sheriff's department. At the same time, it polices the MTA, the Metrolink, the parks, the marinas, government buildings, and of course, it runs the jail system, which is the largest jail system in the country. So it's a very complex agency to run.
And Lee Baca ran it for some 15 years. And
was hoping to go for 20 until he resigned.
Until he resigned earlier this year. And at the beginning of his tenure 15 years ago, there were some controversies, right? He was giving badges out to celebrities and favors out to contributors. So he didn't start with a clean slate.
Well, he's never been short of controversy, but there would be these stories about Baca that would hold on for a couple of days, and then it would all sort of roll off him because, you know, he's been known as one of the most progressive law enforcement people in the nation. That's been his reputation. At the same time, he reaches out to various cultural communities. He comes off as very compassionate. He's very, very likable. However, there's all this other stuff going on, and once I and my senior reporter decided we wanted to report on problems I'd seen in the jails for years and years and years when I reported on gangs. It's like we pulled on a thread and all this other stuff came tumbling down and to, you know, mix metaphors horribly, looked under the hood of this vehicle and, boy, was there some wild stuff down there.
Right. And now we have the feds involved with indictments surrounding what's the brutality, the alleged brutality that's happened in the jails. And lots of sheriff's deputies have been indicted so far.
20 right now.
Yeah, Lee Baca and his deputy, one-time deputy Paul Tanaka, who's now running to be sheriff, have escaped any kind of official accusations.
Well, and that's one of the interesting things about some of these indictments. The charges, there are seven people who were charged behind the indictment of obstruction of justice, and because allegedly they hid a federal informant from his FBI handlers and in this Byzantine strategy of hiding him. Well, the people indicted for hiding informant Anthony Brown, there are seven of them, obviously they didn't assign themselves to this task. And, you know, we have a document that ties Paul Tanaka to it fairly conclusively, but, you know, anecdotally, our sources tell us that this all came straight from the top. And yet, the only people indicted are lieutenants and down. However, attorney Andre Barat has made it very, very clear that his investigation isn't stopping, not by a long shot.
Right. That's the U.S. Attorney Andre Barat. So Paul Tanaka has bit the hand that fed him, in a sense. I mean, he was very close to Lee Baca, and now he accuses Lee Baca of being behind this, or of knowing about it, at least.
Well, he does. And he's saying that he's being unfairly blamed for the problems in the jails, which the Citizens Commission for Jail Violence, when they turned in their report, they were scathing about what they felt his involvement was, that he not only failed to precipitate reform in the jails, but he actually derailed reform. And Tanaka said to us and, you know, to me and, you know, for this article and certainly has been saying it since, that he's unfairly accused and that the sheriff is the guy at the top and that he's the one responsible.
Let's go to the beginning of this, because at the beginning, they were very close, and Lee Baca really trusted Paul Tanaka, and these are two men with wildly different management styles. So Lee Baca accused of being kind of out of touch and not dealing with the day-to-day operations of the sheriff's department. Paul Tanaka very much trying
to be in control.
A nuts
and bolts guy, and certainly someone who's great with finances. He was put in charge of the finances of the department in 2005, and that was something that was really important to the sheriff. But he holds the purse strings, holds a lot of power. And from 2005 onward, he was considered really sort of the power behind the throne. And as time went along, he became reportedly something of a shadow sheriff, so that the sheriff was the big picture guy and the guy out in front. But if you wanted anything done, you came to Paul Tanaka. P.S., he's the mayor of Gardena right now, and he's on.
So he's the undersheriff and a mayor.
Well, he was the. I mean, now he's out, of course. But yes, I mean, he was a CPA for years, involved in city politics in Gardena, and then the guy behind the scenes running the largest sheriff's department in the world. I mean, I don't know if sleeping was involved ever, but there's a lot
so
to do.
So he had this pay-to-play operation you write about, which he denies,
by the way,
it was a pay-to-play operation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that one had to give to his campaign and do various favors for him in order to be favored and for promotions and plum positions.
His campaign to be mayor of Gardena.
To be mayor of Gardena. I know. You know, this is such a complicated thing. My niece, who's also a writer, said, it's like soap opera. And I went, no. This is grand opera.
Hence my House of Cards reference.
Yes, I know. I liked your intro because it's very much the case.
But there's also this time he spent at the Linwood Station, and this is where he became part of a clique. And these cliques used to exist in the LAPD, and they were gotten rid of, but they thrive, as you report, in the sheriff's department.
Well, these deputy gangs, and in a lot of, you know, subcultures like the military and law enforcement, you'll have affinity groups, as sociologists call them. But they can go off the rails, and that seems to be what has happened in the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. In the Linwood Station, they had a clique they called the Vikings. They had matching tattoos. They threw sort of gang-like signs. Any supervisors who attempted to rein them in, they would harass them, you know, pour stuff on their cars, slash their tires reportedly until the supervisors backed off. Paul Tanaka to this day has a Viking tattoo, which he's admitted to, and still has, you know, strong affiliations with a lot of people from that era. There was a huge lawsuit in the late 90s, class action suit, where all these Vikings were named. Paul Tanaka was not. The federal judge who ruled on it called it a racist group that was completely out of control. And then there have been other deputy gangs since then. There are the Regulators, there are the Jump Out Boys, and most notoriously right now, there were two deputy gangs reportedly in the LA County jails, in Men's Central jails, the 3,000 Boys and the 2,000 Boys. And former commander Robert Olmsted, who's another one of these candidates for sheriff, was told in the course of commanding custody that you, in order to be able to earn your ink, i.e. your tattoo, in the 2,000 Boys, you had to break the bone of an inmate. So that's stuff that is certainly obviously not conducive to constitutional policing.
And Paul Tanaka knew about this?
Well, everything leads us to believe that he was supportive of the kind of policing that he felt was very aggressive, that precipitated lots of arrests, could bring crime down. And although he disputes that, he gave a lot of documented talks to deputies and talked to them about working the gray. He says that didn't mean crossing over legal lines, but there are other indications from other officers who were present for these talks that his suggestion was that you did skate the edge of legality, and if you went a little bit over, I'll have your back.
So the violence in the jails, that becomes a huge scandal, and Lee Baca forces Tanaka out. And that's when their relationship ends.
Fractures,
and then Tanaka decides, I'm gonna run for office.
Well, Tanaka was always slated, at least since 2004 or 2005, to be the heir apparent to Sheriff Lee Baca. And then when they fractured, of course, he was no longer the heir apparent, and he told people that he was selecting other people. So then Tanaka went on his own and devised a different strategy to become the sheriff. And this has been his dream and his goal for a very long time, and he's pursuing it. And everybody is betting whether or not he's going to be indicted and whether the indictments will go up that high or even higher.
Lee Baca has always said he didn't know what was happening in the jails. Do you believe him?
Well, if he didn't know, it's the most deliberately willful ignorance. Either he's shut his eyes to an irresponsible degree or is compartmentalizes to a degree that is equally alarming. He was certainly told by all kinds of people, including this former commander, Olmsted, who repeatedly told him that reforms were being derailed. And then eventually, when Baca wouldn't listen to him, he went to the FBI and ultimately to the press. It's a complex psychology. On the other hand, Baca put into play this education-based incarceration, which helps inmates and allows them to pursue academics and life skills inside the jails. And he believes in it and he means it. He believes that incarceration should be more than just locking people up. And so on one hand, you have that, and he's quite sincere about it. On the other hand, you have this lawsuit factory in which people have been convincingly, I mean, credibly, we've heard, getting beat up, having their rights violated with very little consequence for those doing the beating. And that's what a lot of this federal investigation has been about. Now there's a second one in looking into pattern and practice and violation of civil rights. So it's not one, but two going on in the jails right now.
And is the problem that there is no oversight like there is with the Los Angeles Police Department? There is no civilian oversight review board. Basically, the sheriff has said the oversight is, you know, every 4 years I get to be elected or not by the people of Los Angeles County.
In the end, he answers to the voters. And as a matter of fact, when former Sheriff Baca testified in front of the Citizens Commission for Jail Violence, at some point, the very frustrated legal director said, well, then how do we hold you accountable? And Baca paused and smiled and said, don't elect me.
It's a great article. It's a great read. It's in the current issue of Los Angeles Magazine, Celeste Freeman's piece, Downfall, about the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. And Celeste also runs the news website, Witness LA, which you can see online, witnessla.com. Celeste, thank you for coming in.
Oh, thanks, Madeline.
And we reached out to Lee Baca and Paul Tanaka to comment. They have not responded. The Sheriff's Department provided a written response to the allegations of gang-like activity within their ranks. It says, the Sheriff's Department has investigated employees that have become involved in unprofessional behavior as a group and individually. In each instance where misconduct has been identified, appropriate administrative action has been taken, including termination from employment. And it goes on to say, we will continue to investigate any allegation of misconduct and take appropriate action. All right. Warren Olney is here now with a preview of To the Point coming up at 1 o'clock.
Hi. Let me just say that last story that you just did is really important. And, of course, there's a sheriff's election coming up, and Tanaka is one of the candidates to replace Lee Baca. We'll see how all that comes down. We're going to be talking about the proposal by the Secretary of Defense to reduce the Pentagon budget. Actually, it's reducing the increases in the Pentagon budget, which is worth pointing out, I think. And we'll get some very interesting people who have worked for both Republicans and Democrats and find out exactly what's being cut, what it means for the most dominant military in the history of the world, and one that is comparable to all of the others in the world combined. So there doesn't seem to be any concern about an existential threat to this country.
No.
But what there is concern about is, of course, all the profits that are made, all the jobs that are created by various military activities. And we'll see how this might fly.
The military-industrial complex.
You got it.
Warren Olney, that comes up at 1 o'clock on To the Point. We'll look forward to that. Thank you. And before that, on this show coming up, doctors are just baffled by a polio-like illness that has sickened about 20 California children in the past year and a half. It's really a mystery, but we'll try to get some clues as to what's causing it from one of the doctors who is treating these children. That's coming up next on Press Play.
This podcast is produced by KCRW, a nonprofit public radio station based in Los Angeles. We rely on listeners like you. Support the podcasts you love by becoming a member. Go to kcrw.com/join.
This is Press Play. I'm Madeline Brand. Well, doctors are stumped by a polio-like illness that sickened about 20 California children in the past 18 months. At least five of them have been partially paralyzed. All of the patients were vaccinated for polio, and the disease, that disease, has been eradicated in the U.S. for 30 years now. So what's causing this new illness, and should we be worried about it? Emmanuelle Wauban is a neurologist at the University of California, San Francisco, and she's one of the doctors who is treating these cases. Dr. Wauban, welcome to Press Play.
My pleasure.
Well, take us through the discovery of this. Who was the first patient you saw, and what were the initial symptoms?
So the initial symptoms of the first patient I saw were actually paralysis in one arm that was very severe, to the point that the patient could barely move his arm. This patient didn't experience any numbness or tingling or any other neurologic symptoms. And that brought the patient to the attention of the hospital. So it was in an outside hospital. The patient was investigated, and they were not sure exactly what was going on. So I saw that patient the first time about 3 months after the onset of the paralysis. And at that time, he had not recovered much of the weakness. And initially was referred to my clinic because I run a pediatric MS clinic at Benioff Children's Hospital. And I actually felt that it was not MS, and it was something very different. We tried to rule out the disease like polio, so that patient had had vaccination and he had a good immune response to the vaccination. And we looked for other causes such as West Nile virus or other viruses, and we couldn't find anything. So that's the story about that patient. And then I shared the case with one of my colleagues, and it turns out he had seen a similar case around the same time. And then over the past year and a half, we have seen five.
Wow, five kids. And so is there any theory as to what might be causing this?
So we think this is probably a virus that is causing that.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to say whether it's a single virus causing that or whether it's maybe different viruses, although at this point we know that there's not too many viruses that have been identified that are known to be associated with polio-like cases.
Mm-hmm.
So in our five patients, some of the patients were seen kind of late after the onset of their paralysis. And we know that when there are viruses at play, they are cleared within a matter of a few weeks or a month at most. So when we see the patients after 1 month, it's usually impossible to identify actually the agent. Two of our patients, two of the five patients, were found to have enterovirus 68 in their nasal swabs. We're not sure yet whether this is related to the paralysis experience, but we're not ruling that out, and we're trying to investigate this further.
And why do you think this is happening now?
So this is polio-like cases are not new. We know that since polio has been eradicated in the U.S., there's been a little bit of cases here and there that would be identified. They are not necessarily reported carefully because this is not a reportable disease in the U.S. But if I take the memory, for example, of UCS Albany Children's Hospital, there was a similar case that may have been seen about 8 years ago. So there was always, I would say, you know, a few cases here and there. What is peculiar about our cases is that they are a little more frequent than the background noise, I would say, of seeing one case once every 10 years. We are not at all in a situation of an epidemic, so there's really no fear about that. The number of cases has been overall stable per our, you know, experience at Stanford and UCSF over the past year and a half. So we don't see an increasing number of cases to our clinics or in the hospital over the past few months. So there's really no concern that we're about to face an epidemic.
Okay. Is it possible at all that the polio vaccine itself may have caused this illness?
No, because these patients were vaccinated a long time before, and they were just the polio vaccine is actually not associated with this type of presentation because when it's used appropriately, there's no such risk actually.
So you said that this isn't really an epidemic waiting to happen, and yet it does sound really scary when you think of otherwise healthy children mysteriously coming down with a polio-like illness.
Correct.
And it's inexplicable.
So three of the five patients had actually a few days before being paralyzed experienced some benign upper respiratory illness. Another of the patients had asthma attack-like symptoms a few days before. So we think because of this that there may be some virus involved. And again, the numbers are very small. I mean, we're talking about, you know, five cases we have confirmed in California in the past 18 months. There may be up to a total of 20 or 25 cases in California in the past 18 months, but we don't have any information on these cases because the public health department is actually taking care of reviewing those cases. So we're in a situation where we're seeing a few more cases than average that have been seen over the past decades, but not a dramatic difference.
Okay, but I'm sure you and your colleagues are feverishly trying to figure out what's behind this. It's such a
Correct.
Mystery, right?
Correct. Yes. Lots of work to be done.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking time out to speak with us today.
My pleasure.
That's Dr. Emmanuel Wauban. She's a neurologist at the University of California, San Francisco. Well, it's that time in the show again to welcome Jolie Myers and the mailbag.
Feedback. So we talked to Kristen Bell at the top of the show about taking pictures of celebrity kids.
Yep.
Well, we actually heard from another actress, this time on Twitter, Elizabeth Perkins. She starred with Mary Louise Parker in the show Weeds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she tweeted that running pictures of celebrity kids is irresponsible, which I guess is an unsurprising opinion from her, but she says it jeopardizes the safety of kids and that kids shouldn't be fair game just because their parents are in the public eye. A side note, she also voiced a character in Finding Nemo, which is a Pixar movie, which means...
I see the grand unified theory.
The great unified Pixar theory has now spread to press play. Back to the celebrity kids. Joe gave us a call. He left a voicemail, and he said that the head of the photo agency that we talked to, he had a point.
Some of these paparazzi are taking the cues from the celebrities, and they want to make it seem like the celebrities are these innocent victims when there seems to be plenty of examples of celebrities using their children to promote their careers, which we would consider disgusting for an attorney or an engineer or even a politician to do.
Even a politician. Like that. Chad also tweeted at us, he didn't take a stand on children and paparazzi, but he did take a stand on covering this topic in the first place. He says, I don't care about the first world problems of celebrities. Aren't there children in LA that are going hungry? Perhaps we should focus on them. Ouch, Chad. Well, we want to hear about your first world problems. You can write us an email at pressplay@kcrw.com. We had quite a few Twitter responses to this celebrity children thing, and I'm talking to people all throughout the show on Twitter, so I want to hear from you at KCRW Press Play. And that's what we got for feedback today.
Yeah, we want to hear from you, whether you agree with our coverage or you disagree with our coverage. We'd like to hear what you think. And you can leave us a voicemail at 1-844-PRESS-PLAY or on Twitter at KCRW-PRESS-PLAY. And that is about all the time that we have today for the show. We're going to hit up Warren Olney and To the Point at 1 o'clock. I'm Madeline Brand, and I will see you tomorrow.